Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. Recently, KRMG's Russell Mills took a trip to Tulsa City Hall for a talk with Mayor G.T. Bynum.
The first thing I wanted to talk about was the OIM. Mm-hmm. And when I very first got the email about that, I was like, what, you know, this is me talking. Why hadn't that ever happened before?
Right.
And then, I mean, I think the first email I got was actually from the FOP going, and they're not happy about it.
Yeah.
So can you kind of break it down for folks what it is that the Office of the Independent Monitor would do?
Sure. It basically has kind of three main purposes. So the first would be policy work. For us, that the main thing that would look like is focusing on our community policing program and really measuring how we're doing. That's one of the things that was in our program, one of the 77 points in our community policing program that we've been implementing that we haven't been able to implement so far, is having an outside entity come in and tell us how we're doing. Like, for us, it's not enough just to say, oh, everybody has a body camera and we're doing implicit bias training. We need to know, is our body camera policy working? Is implicit bias training actually making a difference? Officers feel like it's making a difference? Do citizens feel like it's making a difference? And we need some independent entity to look at those things and tell us. And so the independent monitor would do that. That'd be step one. Step two is community outreach, helping citizens become more engaged and aware of both their rights and their opportunities to play a role in making Tulsa safer. And then the third one is the one that gets the most, I think, heat and debate, and that's oversight. And that would be looking at use of force incidents and the internal affairs investigation that goes into those use of force incidents. And before that final report and recommendation is turned over to the chief, the independent monitor would look at the investigation that was done and look at things like, was everybody that should have been interviewed? Was every policy that should have been looked at? And if something was missed, point that out so that you can have a good report. And then they go through, the independent monitor would issue a report twice a year that really summarizes these use of force incidents and what happened both in the incident and as a result of them from a departmental disciplinary standpoint. So that's in summation what the monitor would do.
So that's a lot. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of work.
It's a big ask.
Yes.
And does this create a new, like, city department, new entity?
There would be a new office that we're still discussing where it might fall within the overall kind of org chart
structure,
the city. But the main thing is, and the key in offices like this anywhere in any city in the country, is that it needs to be independent and outside of the police department to have that level of validity that it needs to.
So obviously I'm going to go at some point and talk to the FOP and say, mm-hmm. you know, where are you at on this? But what are you hearing from them? What seems to be the objection? Because they acted to me like they felt that this was a breach of the city's, you know, negotiated labor contract with with the FOP.
Yeah, they said that before we'd even detailed what it was going to do, which I think was unfortunate. Need to put away the jump to conclusion, Matt. On this, I think, one, we've worked with our legal team to make sure that what we're proposing here in Tulsa does not touch on anything that would pull this into collective bargaining. I think when they first heard about it, they thought that we were just going to do a cookie cutter take what they do in Denver and plug it in here without assessing how it might fit what we do here, and that's not what we're proposing. And so I think that was concern number one. And then concern number two, what I've heard, is just this worry about, you know, the slippery slope argument that, well, this isn't so bad. This seems pretty common sense, but someone could come back later and change it and make it worse. And the reality is, if we applied that logic to what we do at the city, we would never do anything, because anything we do, at some point, someone could come back later down the road and make it worse. So I don't subscribe to that. I mean, I understand the concern, but the burden there is on the citizens of Tulsa to elect people that will follow through on their best interests, not for us to try and predict, you know, 50 years from now, what's best for Tulsa.
Was the plan to create an OIM sparked by any particular incident or string of incidents, or is it just something that
it was really just kind of it evolved over time. Our Commission on Community Policing that we pulled together in my first month as mayor, that gave us really the roadmap for what we're implementing for our community policing program in Tulsa, they had recommended having an outside entity, and it was the COPS office at the U.S. Department of Justice, to come in and look at our community policing program. And then that department, that program, was shuttered. And so that's not an option anymore for us to do. So we've spent a couple of years now looking around the country at who might be able to fill that role, and realized that the community policing and the way that we're approaching in Tulsa is so new around the United States right now that there isn't an entity that does that for other cities that we can say, oh, okay, well, that's who we want to use here. So from the policy side, that issue arose for us and was something we needed to solve. And then on the oversight side of things, that was really a continuing discussion that I've been having with other mayors around the country, because when I came in as mayor, obviously we'd had several kind of high-profile officer-involved shootings, and the answer that we were given was, well, the DA will look into it, and if it was criminal, the DA, if it might be criminal, the DA will file charges, and that's the outside look at it that the citizens get. And felt like there's a space between criminal charges being filed and what is discussed in internal affairs within the department that isn't accessible to the public. And a lot of the distrust that we see in our community right now exists in that void. And so realize there is a need for an outside entity that has public confidence, that can look at these things and give the citizens reassurance that those incidents are being followed up on the right way. That's not to suggest that I have any reason to think that they aren't, but your average citizen needs some outside independent entity that can give them that confidence in the process. And so I started, I would ask every mayor that I have talked to in the last 2 years, whether it's at conferences or classes I've gone through, I've asked them time and again, you know, how do you deal with these issues? Because it's been such a heavy load for us to carry in Tulsa in my first 2 years as mayor. And a consensus that I heard over and over and over again was, well, here's how we deal with it in my city, but I'll be honest with you, if we were starting from scratch, we'd do what they do in Denver. Heard that over and over and over again. And so finally, we started looking into what they do in Denver, and ultimately, my senior management team and I went to Denver and spent the day meeting with their Office of the Independent Monitor, but also their mayor, their police chief, community activists. And what was really interesting was across the board, those folks told us that, you know, it's not perfect, but of all the models that are out there, they think it's the best. And so we thought, well, what, you know, Denver is a very different city than Tulsa. We can take this general idea and really adapt it to what works for our city. And that's what I've presented to the council when I came back.
So the positive feedback also came from the police chief of Denver. Like, he was on board with it and he liked it.
Yes.
Have you spoken with Chief Jordan?
Sure.
And got his thoughts. Well, kind of where is he at on this?
Well, I'll let Chief Jordan speak for himself because the conversations we have are in confidence. But
fair enough.
But we have spent time not just with Chief Jordan, but his command staff, going through different options on this, getting their thoughts, because it's important to me that this office work well with the police department. I mean, our intent here is not to have this sort of boogeyman oversight entity. It's to have a tool that is really useful both for citizens and police officers. And so it goes both ways there. So we've spent a lot of time visiting with him and the team in the police department.
Kind of like body cams, right?
I view it as, and that's a great insight, I think it is very similar. It's one of those things that if you're doing everything the right way, then fear not. And it actually serves to help vouch for the way that you're doing
things. To exculpate police officers who are charged of being overly violent or whatever.
Right, exactly.
So, excellent. All right, and finally on this one, like funding it, does it fit in the budget? Doesn't sound like it would be a super expensive thing. I mean, you got to have some offices, and I presume the folks that are appointed, are they work on a volunteer basis? Or they
they're
employees?
City employees.
Okay.
Yeah, and well, there's two facets of that.
Okay.
So you have your Office of the Independent Monitor staff, but then you would also have a Citizen Oversight Board that is not overseeing the police department. That's been another, I think, misunderstanding that, oh, we're going to have a group of citizens come in and conduct internal affairs investigations. That's crazy. No, that is not being proposed. The Citizen Oversight Board looks at what really evaluates the performance of the independent monitor on behalf of the citizens. So it's the oversight entity for the oversight entity, if you will. And those people are volunteers. But the cost, at least we have a general estimate, and we just took the cost that Denver has for this program and the number of sworn personnel they have, and using a ratio on that basis, have at least a placeholder in our budget process right now of about $500,000 a year, which when you consider that we spend over $100 million a year on policing, doesn't seem too much to ask.
And one wonders if just avoiding a lot of litigation might save more than half a million dollars a year. So since that kind of segues into a budget discussion, and I believe, was it this week that you... I kind of trying to remember. Was this that you presented?
No, I'll do that in a month. This week was the Improve Our Tulsa.
Yes. Okay. So Improve Our Tulsa 2.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed that it, like, the main emphasis, at least in terms of dollars spent, was on streets and infrastructure. So talk to us a little bit about your priorities.
Sure. So, you know, one, it's important to understand how our streets got in the shape they're in. So in 1966, the city limits of Tulsa went up to 31st and Memorial.
Right.
And the city of Broken Arrow was talking about annexing all of the unincorporated land that we today think of as East Tulsa and South Tulsa. And within a matter of weeks, the city of Tulsa beat them to the punch, which was one of the most important historic moves in the history of our city, because those areas have really been the growth engines for Tulsa in the last 50 years. The trade-off of that, though, was that we tripled the geographic footprint of the city with that annexation, and we had to build all of the street and stormwater infrastructure in those newer parts of the city which was extraordinarily expensive. And we did that at the cost of maintaining streets in the older parts of the city. And now, in 2019, those original streets that we put in, especially like in South Tulsa, two-lane roads don't facilitate the population load that is now out there that wasn't out there when we were installing them in the 60s and 70s.
They were country lanes back then.
Correct. And so we find ourselves in a place where we've got to fix up the streets in the older parts of town and do a serious amount of widening in the newer parts of town. And all of that costs a lot of money. And so we started in 2008 a program to really try and start catching up on that backlog. We spent more money between 2008 and 13 on streets than we had in the previous quarter century combined. And that was the all-time largest street program. With Improve Our Tulsa in 2013, we even increased that amount. And now we're up for the renewal of Improve Our Tulsa again. And we recognize that streets are still not where we want them to be. We still have to keep plugging away. We've made progress in the last 10 years. I know for a lot of folks it doesn't feel that way, but if you consider where our streets would be if we hadn't made those investments, the city would be shut down. I mean, we'd be driving on unintentional gravel roads. So today, we also conducted this year in partnership with Gallup, first of its kind survey of the citizens of Tulsa that really helped us understand what people expect from the city in a granular way. And one of the fascinating things that come out of that was Tulsans said the number one thing that needs to improve in Tulsa, not economic development, not public safety, not education, was our streets. And so...
Did that surprise you?
I mean, on the one hand, no, because
you drive here.
We all know the streets need to improve. What did surprise me was that it took precedence over education or public safety, given the amount of discussion in our community around those areas over the last couple years. And so the council and I have been doing a lot of site visits and fact-finding for the last couple of months, looking at not just street issues, but also parks, city buildings, city vehicles, you know, police cars, fire trucks, snow plows, stuff like that, all basic infrastructure things that would traditionally be included in this program. And so the overall presentation that I gave yesterday was just my attempt at kind of summarizing the consensus that I had felt based on all my discussions with my colleagues on the council. And that means about 70% of that program goes to transportation, streets, both rehabilitation and widening, sidewalks, stuff like that, but also a substantial investment in city vehicles. I mean, last year we purchased our first new fire trucks in a decade, and that was at a point where we were running into situations where our fleet management team, which is, by the way, the number one ranked fleet management team in North America, was having a hard time keeping our trucks fixed at a pace where we were fully stocked out in our stations, which is a public safety hazard for folks. So we have to replace those trucks. We have police cars that are being driven way beyond their past due date. And we've got snow plows that, you know, some folks have seen a photo of me where we've got people driving around where the floorboards of these things have rusted out.
Put your foot through the floor.
Right.
I saw that.
Yeah. And so we have to replace those. So that's the overall, you know, almost everything that's in that program as proposed that'll go out to our town hall meetings. It's not anything new or flashy or all that exciting. It's really your basic infrastructure, the things that help keep the city operating day to day.
Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum, special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.